How do you measure the success of your employer brand efforts? Maybe you just notice more smiles on people's faces, so you feel like your work is justified. Or maybe you are on best places to work lists and feel awarded for your hard work. Well, we prefer the hard numbers. The Employer Brand Index helps you calculate the return on investment of your employer brand, and in turn, validates the work you are doing to your organization. Having a great employer brand means you have to offer a great candidate experience, employee experience, and even alumni experience. When you use insights from our Employer Brand Index, you can take action and move the needle. Want to know more? Just get in touch. Go to employerbrandindex.co.
Hey, sans Vaison, it's Jorgen Stumbag here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Today, we're going to talk to one of the world's biggest corporations in terms of headcount, at least, and specifically to an individual managing a very disparate region and really understanding all that the challenges that entails. So let's start the show.
Hey, James.
Hey, Jorgen, how's
Welcome
it going?
To the podcast.
Yeah, really well. How are you today?
Very good. Hot. It's still very, very hot, but yeah, surviving.
Oh, nice. Please let our listeners know who you are and what you do.
Of course. So I'm James McFadden. I'm currently the recruitment marketing and employer brand manager over at Nestle, specifically looking after Middle East, Africa and Turkey. So I'm very lucky to be based over in sunny Dubai.
Wow. So that is a big region. And how big is Nestle as a, I know it's a huge global company. How big is it in this specific region?
In my specific region, so we're just over 330,000 globally. What that means for Middle East, Africa and Turkey is around 50,000. And it's including, you know, all of our offices as well as our factories. We have a lot of production out here. So it's not just people in nice glossy offices, but it's also kind of the blue collar workers too.
And what are some of the talent challenges that you are faced with specifically in this region?
So like everybody else, especially people from multinational companies, one of our big talent challenges is really getting consistency. So whether you are an auditor based out of San Diego or a medical delegate based out of Saudi Arabia, the Nestle you experience that you come into work each and every day is A, as was promised throughout the process, and B, is a place where you can enjoy it, you can thrive, and you can really fulfill your potential. So I think for any large organization, having that unified, consistent, transparent message is really, really important. But of course, it's really, really difficult to achieve. Other familiar challenges, diversity and inclusion remain an absolute critical number one HR priority for us here at Nestle. So if we look at what that really means, driving for more females, especially in senior leadership positions. But of course, how far we need to push that dial if you compare senior women in the heart of the city of London compared to senior women in places where only recently they've been able to vote, where they've only recently, you know, within the last 12 months, been able to be mobile and drive, and maybe have different societal pressures from family life. How we bring that to life or how we really execute that, of course, is extremely different.
What is your employer brand strategy?
So the strategy as a whole, everything is anchored in our foundation to for enhancing the quality of life and contributing to a healthier future, and driven by our values, which are all founded in respect. What does this mean from an employer brand position? It means that that has to consistently underpin everything we do. But what that actually looks like, means, is articulated, the platforms we use, is hundreds and hundreds of micro conversations. So we need to keep in mind this one single-minded vision, so quality of life and healthier future, and really bring that to life of what that means for a farmer in Central West Africa versus to what that might mean to a marketeer in Lebanon. So it's really, really about creating conversations with meaning, bringing stories to life of how we actually do this, because I think as corporations, we're very good at chanting off our company lines, our company missions, but actually making this relevant and make it make sense to the type of talent we're trying to reach is a continual struggle. And it's something that we're continually trying to hone and reshape and reframe.
All right, so you've got a big spread here in your region, all the way from Lebanon to southwest Africa and so on. Are there any specific issues in any of these areas that you'd like to highlight?
For sure. So let me pick one example from Middle East and one from mainland Africa. So from a Middle East perspective, one of our really big challenges here is nationalization. So when we think about diversity and inclusion, we think about gender, we think about age, but something quite unique about this region is really getting people from their countries to make up a certain proportion to really lead our operations in those countries to the next level. But this is particularly prevalent in countries like Saudi Arabia. As an organization or as a trend in the market, in a lot of the Middle Eastern countries, there's a real bias towards public sector careers. So really coming up with great reasons of why these people should join A, the private sector, and B, an organization which is definitely not of the region, is a real, real challenge. But the way we do that really is by finding out the incredible people who are from those countries, who are making real impact and difference, and leaving that legacy and being able to kind of attract people who are drawn by that. So we're not always going to be drawn by people who want the biggest paycheck, but we are going to be really, really appealing to people who want to do that legacy piece. We've had lovely stories recently of, you know, women who are becoming the first sales supervisors in their country for our company. So to be able to be the first, it's exciting and it feels very, very relevant to what's happening to a country like Saudi as a whole. And then I said I'd pick on an Africa example as well. I think the biggest or the most unique challenge we have in a lot of African countries, especially Central West Africa, is the really high rate of youth unemployment. So in terms of the volumes we're dealing with, we're very used to a very cyclical, a very organized and a very well trodden path with graduate recruitment in places like the UK, whereas in Africa, because there is such a high level of unemployment, we need to do A, much more to articulate exactly who we are, exactly what we need, and exactly what you need to succeed. But the second part of that is really leave no man or woman behind. So how can we really, really create meaning and value and impact in these regions so we are upskilling everyone, irregardless of whether they're going to come to Nestle or not? So how do we do that? You know, yes, it's employability skills. Yes, it's help with how to find jobs, writing CVs. But much more than that, it's about how can we utilize the skills, the ambitions, and the real capabilities that people do have in order to inspire them? A really exhausting but nice project we've tied up recently is looking at the theme of entrepreneurship. So how can we innovate our supply chain, everything from packaging for cocoa, because there's a really high volume of crop which is damaged through the supply chain, right through to sustainable packaging. And we were asking young people who have already got an idea or they're already starting their small enterprise to join forces with Nestle. And yes, we give them funding to help further this, but we also give them access to our incredible research and development centers. We give them incredible access to mentors. And this isn't kind of a tick the box, yes, the exercise. Yes, it's lovely to be helpful. But more importantly, it's really helping us understand what is the next trend or what is the next solution to one of the challenges, which is, does it cost money? And can we get these great minds with great ideas to join us in our R&D centers? Because not similarly to places like Saudi or Kuwait, we would really like the future heads of research and development to really be homegrown from Africa, so they can really understand the context, all the considerations they need to put into place. And this is just one example of a vehicle for them to get there.
I was thinking in terms of activating and running these sort of initiatives, how many different languages are you dealing with across your region?
So at this point, I'm dealing with all the countries in the Middle East and all the countries in Central West Africa. So that is English, Arabic, Portuguese, and French. We don't go necessarily into every single language there could be. So for example, we're about to bring on board East and South Africa. And with that, there might be a couple of additional languages, but we can't possibly have every language, every dialect. It is a really key point in terms of how much work it takes to create content which is truly inclusive. So, for example, we're about to release a new campaign about the work we're doing across Central West Africa, specifically in our technical fields. And it's a challenge to get everyone to feel that their business, their factory, their office is really, really represented, and still have these lovely, glossy end result videos when you are switching between three different languages, three different types of subtitles. So it's really, you need to have something for everybody, but can you please everybody all the time? No. So it's thinking, is the business challenge, what is our big goal in terms of where we're trying to make the biggest impact? Start with that. And then from there, be mindful of, you know, we did that last time. Can we appeal to Portuguese speakers? Can we do something funny in French? Which is a challenge from a boy from Birmingham who speaks English pretty well, but apart from that, not so much.
Yeah, and also I'm thinking that there must be some cultural differences as well. In terms of employer brand or recruitment marketing activation, can you see any trends as in, like, some countries they like video, others they like this sort of social network, or is there anything obvious there?
100%. So that's, I've been in this role just over a year, and I was very aware that a lot of the countries I was dealing with, I didn't necessarily have really in-depth experience of. So the vast part of my first few months here was going out, meeting those people and asking them, what do you engage with? What platforms do you use? And ensuring that we were then able to launch platforms or tools which played into those strengths. Because we all know we can say the most incredible, insightful, inspiring message, but if it's somewhere that people aren't going to see it, hear it, or watch it, then it's kind of a waste of time. So the adoption rates for Snapchat and Instagram in countries like the United Arab Emirates and Saudi are so off the chart. If you're not there, they're not necessarily really going to be looking at your lovely LinkedIn corporate page, especially trying to attract that youth model. If you think that more than 50% of the population is under 30, we need to put more than 50% of our efforts to that youth audience. And if in Saudi and UAE, where those population figures are from, you know, we need to make sure that we're building a presence. And I'm not saying that we've got the most beautiful Instagram page, which is solving all of our problems, but are we seeing traction with the types of nationalities and countries we're looking for? Absolutely. And other than that, I think, yes, culturally, there are lots of differences. And this is from a language perspective, an upbringing perspective, a what does the family look perspective, but also by laws and regulations of who can do what. So, for example, shift work. In some of the factories, you can't do night shifts in certain countries if you're a woman. And so you're not going to become an expert in every country overnight. Central West Africa alone, we have 28 countries, all with slightly different laws, values, and customs. And then you build on the tribal differences between the main tribes, which surprised me. Actually, that was the biggest differentiator of culture, was what tribe you're from. So again, that's another layer which you need to take into account. So it's constantly asking, constantly sense-checking, and constantly building a culture where you're allowed to ask those really basic questions. I'm very visibly not from the region, and I think in order to build that trust and a two-way street, being able to ask quite sensitive or personal questions, but knowing that it is for a reason, for a purpose, to make sure that their colleagues, their managers, their subordinates are all going to be people that can really live and work alongside them and really strive here.
Now, million-dollar question, how do you measure the return on investment on your efforts in recruitment marketing and employer brand?
Oh, you sound just like my boss. The employer brand recruitment marketing teams here at Nestle are relatively new. There was a new structure that was brought into board, you know, almost 18 months ago now. And one thing which I keep on saying is we are not going to fill all your pipelines overnight. Metrics like your messaging really, really need to flex and evolve over time. And it is a constant challenge to really demonstrate to the business how we're providing, demonstrating value, which is either saving money, raising people's perceptions of Nestlé as an organization, decreasing time to fill. So it's half kind of speed, half kind of science. It's getting people excited about the actual, the great creative you're producing, but then really, really breaking down what is the metric, which really shows to you that this is worth doing. So the metrics that we have in place are things like volume of applications, hiring manager satisfaction, the quality of hire, the diversity of our pipelines. But this is a real balanced scorecard. It's not like everything can go up or down in the way you want at one time. Quite often you have to say, as a business, our priority is X. And so the metrics which will, you know, reflect that are these two. These are the most important. So we really ask people to partner with us so they understand that flex, that rise and fall, so we can really focus on what does the business need and then come up with the metrics and the measurements to show it. That sounds really fluffy. Sometimes when I'm in meetings with colleagues, I can kind of see them thinking, is this marketing speak? But it's not. It's common sense. As right. HR professionals, comms professionals, marketing professionals would all love to achieve everything at one time and have this constantly climbing curve, which just shows that we're doing better and better, saving more and more money. But sometimes you need to invest a little bit more to get over that first hump. Sometimes you've been really focusing on an area for quite long, and quite naturally, the scale of the results are going to decline slightly. So it's about being confident enough to sit in a room saying, this is the business problem we had. This is the method with which we are solving it. These are the early impressions in terms of the metrics and numbers we're seeing, but you need to give us time and space to breathe, because I've applied on our company website, and you know what? If I launch a campaign tomorrow, it's not going to reflect in my pipelines in 30 days. I'm not going to have a lovely, incredible hire in 30 days. So it is a lot of expectation management, but you do have to have some numbers to show it is working. Otherwise, those rolling eyes are going to roll around the door.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so what would be your top tip or top tips to other employer brand practitioners listening to this right now?
So the first thing I'd advise is focus on your biggest headache first. So as a relatively new function where people just look at us like part magician, part artist, part graphic designer, part recruiter, what is causing the business the biggest headache from a people perspective, and focus on that. So if you can do, if you can solve that one big problem where really giving people time to focus on other stuff, proving that we can deliver real value, it's going to help you become a lot louder voice at that table, a lot more of an important stakeholder for people who maybe not worked with employer brand practitioners before, win the fans and applause to make the business better, and people will let you continue to do that. So that's definitely the first one. I think secondly is, especially in my experience, both at Nestlé and in previous roles, define your circle of influence. Businesses are really complex beasts, and I wish all organizations had one organogram which showed you who reports to who has the biggest influence, who makes the final say, who holds the budget. But we know organizations aren't like that. So take some time to really meet, your HR colleagues, your comms colleagues, influencers within the business, where even if they're not that senior, they really, really seem to be, if they're bought in, it's going to make your life a lot easier. Who are those people within your four walls who can help amplify your content? There is nothing worse than seeing loads of employer brand content constantly being pushed by HR. Because you know what? If I'm trying to attract the next director of marketing, then I want to be hearing from the incredible talent in marketing teams we have. So understand who are these people with great networks, both internally, influential, but also externally, in terms of reach and gravitas, and just those hero teams who are going to make it happen. Because you know what? If you are using external support, so whether that's videographers, whether that's designers, whether that's translations, if they're not being paid in time, then you're not going to be the top of their, oh, I'd love to work with them in the future. So get your finance, your procurement teams on side to make sure that the whole process can flow as beautifully as your creative flows. And the final thing, I guess, which I think is really topical in terms of the future of the workforce, and, you know, we're speaking about robots and automation, and my gosh, what are we all going to be doing in 10 years' time? I think we are very good at crafting stories, and I think we're very good at strategy, and I think we're very good at how we can add real value to the business. But I've really pushed myself recently to actually take that time to invest in my skills. It's very well and good being able to understand the methodology of how to construct an employer brand or a recruitment marketing campaign. But my gosh, my life has got so much easier since I've been able to edit video, do some nice photography, learn new apps and graphics. So, you know what? Something happens with budget or something's not happening in time. But actually being able to have multiple skills to your hand so you and your team can get content out in a timely fashion so you can see that impact and you can win the applause from the business. I can't overstate how important it is for all of us to learn more, do more. And my gosh, like, I'm not a tech savvy person. I find a lot of these things quite terrifying, but all it takes, you know, like your unconscious bias training or like your process to pay training, just take some time to actually learn some skills and crafts, which are really going to help you tell your stories better.
Great. And then my final question for you, James, is really, in your opinion, what is it that makes this space that you operate in special? What is it that drives you?
I think I'm quite a typical HR/marketing hybrid person in the way that I'm really kind of passionate about the link between people and business, but also I like to really build stuff from scratch. I think as much as we would like to think that we've got it nailed and there are some incredible case studies out there and there are lots of projects which I'm incredibly proud to have been part of, I think we've never seen the world change at such a fast pace as it is at the moment. And I mean that in every possible way, politically, through technology, through the absolute explosions of different platforms and products and innovations. So I think it makes it a really exciting place to be, to constantly be learning, to constantly striving to improve how we do this, and to constantly, you know, we're no longer looking to be the first at every turn, but we're certainly looking to be a little bit more sophisticated in everything that we deliver, measure, and impact our businesses. That was really fluffy.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and your insights today.
You're so welcome. Always a pleasure to chat.
Okay, there you have it. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to pick up some Nestlé cereal on your way home tonight, as well as reaching out to James and saying thank you so much for sharing your insights. And of course, you can subscribe to this podcast at Spotify, SoundCloud, Google, and all the other places. And if you really want to go to town on being nice, then feel free to leave a review and let us know what you think of the podcast. Also, if you're keen on understanding and measuring your employer brand, so getting that elusive ROI, why not check out the Employer Brand Index, which is our approach to understanding a company's reputation as an employer. That's employerbrandindex.co, or just drop me a line and I'm happy to talk to you about it. That was it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in and catch you next time. Hey, do.
What is the best thing about Switzerland?
No idea.
Yeah, me neither, but I mean the flag's a big plus.